Just pray for me Friday. Hopefully it will all come together for sure by then. It's still a little loose, but we're working on it. And then also pray that Phyllis's back would allow her to travel well. We're gonna take extra day to travel just because we're going to take our time. This morning, I want to look at a topic that has been on my mind a lot the last 6 months, and it's a topic that probably is something all of us are aware of. Well, I would say we are aware of it, and sometimes we kind of get lost in the weeds. You know, I thought about our Sunday school lesson this morning, and actually in the scripture that we're going to be using for our text this morning, the Pharisees got lost in the weeds of being so consistent they were inconsistent. And we can do the same thing. And I think it's something we must guard against. The text we want to turn to is John chapter 4, the last part, starting, I'm going to probably start in verse 43 through chapter 5, verse 17. And the title, what I've titled this is Choices or Excuses. We have two different stories that we're looking at this morning, two different scenarios, two totally different reasons for the stories, two different attitudes. And in looking at that, I had to do some thinking about, you know, we often, at the beginning of a new year, we look at New Year's resolutions, and then 2 weeks later, we forget them, and we move on and just keep doing the same thing over and over. We're frustrated because our weights, we gained too much weight last year, so we're going to lose it, but then all of a sudden, the ice cream comes rolling around, and we want ice cream after all. Or some of our behavior patterns, we don't like them, we're going to work on them. So I make a resolution to do that better. I go jogging. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then life happens, and we kind of lose track of those. And we're not going to talk about resolutions this morning. I just want to look at the choices that we make. So I'm going to ask three questions at the beginning. I'm not going to ask you to answer them, but I want you to think about them. Looking back at 2023, what would you have done differently if you had known the outcome of your choice? Is there anything that happened in 2023, the result of your choices, that you'd like a chance to do it over again? I think in golf they call it a mulligan. I know enough about golf that I know that. And in that, what is there that you would like to change in 2024? Here in these two stories, we have two different actual miracles that Jesus did. And if you go back into the first part of the chapter, Jesus had been in Samaria, and he now travels down into Galilee. And when he gets into Galilee, he's again doing miracles, and he's still working and teaching the crowds. And we're going to start in verse 43, and then I'm going to read through it, and then I want to go back and kind of set a picture for us in these stories. After the 2 days, he left for Galilee. Now Jesus himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country. When he arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. They had seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, for they had also been there. Once more, he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. Unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders, Jesus told him, you will never believe. The royal official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Jesus replied, "You may go, your son will live." The man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, "The fever left him yesterday at the seventh hour." Then the father realized that this was the exact time that Jesus had said to him, "Your son will live." So he and all his household believed. This was the second miraculous sign that Jesus performed, having come from Judea to Galilee. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which is in Aramaic, is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one else to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" They asked him, "Who is this fellow, and who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. So we have three people here that we want to look at this morning. One is the official, the second one is the lame man, and the third one is Jesus. So to set the stage, Jesus had been in Samaria. He now was back in Galilee. And this official, this high-ranking official in the Roman government, heard that Jesus was there. And he decided that he was going to go find him. And he came from Capernaum. Now, from Capernaum to where Jesus was approximately 20 miles. So he had an eight-hour walk to get to Jesus. And when he gets there, he has this thing in his mind that Jesus is going to go back with him and Jesus is going to do something great. And instead, Jesus looks at him and says, "Why is it that you always want to see miracles to believe in who I am?" Well, he really didn't care at that point because he had one thing on his mind. He was a desperate father who had a child that was dying that he wanted Jesus to come touch. And in his mind, that was the only way this miracle was going to happen, was for Jesus to come back home with him and to touch that child to heal him. And so he pushes in a little bit and he says, "Sir, come with me before my child dies." Somehow I believe Jesus recognized the desperation in the father. And he says, "Go home. Your child will live." So in verse 47, we see the faith of a man who was desperate. In verse 48, Jesus' response was, now how many of us would have looked at that and said, "You know what, you really don't care. You know, you're rebuking me for coming and asking you for a miracle." But the father said, "No, I want you to go with me." And I think Jesus recognized the desperation. And so he gave him a command and he said, "I want you to go home. Your son will live." When he gets close to home, he meets his servants and they tell him, "Your son is alive. The fever left him yesterday at the seventh hour." And he recognizes that Jesus did not have to be there for his son to be healed. The faith of the father is what made a difference. The second story that we read is, and here there are some interesting parts to this story. I believe in one version, it might be in the ESV, it says after that Jesus went to the feast. The NIV says sometime after that. I'm not sure what the King James says. I didn't read it in there. But it appears that very soon after this incident, Jesus went to a feast, and there were three feasts, and this was one of the three that the Jews kept, and it was a feast that it was required, that was actually required under the law. Now keep in mind, this is Old Testament, and the New Testament has not been instituted yet, so the law, the feasts, and all those things were still in effect. And he goes to the sheep gate. He goes to Jerusalem near the sheep gate. The NIV says near the sheep gate, and I'm not really sure where that was. I'm sure that Sharon could probably fill us in with her tour. They probably showed them where that was. But what I understand is that this was not, and I always, as a child, I remember reading and hearing stories, and you think of the pool, and you think of the porches, and the nice landscape, when it's actually, the sheep pens were actually where the sheep were brought before the Passover, before the feast. And they would bring these sheep, and this is where they would buy the animals for their sacrifices. So if you can imagine, most of us have been in barns before, you can imagine what was in those pens. They weren't swept, they weren't clean. There might have been some clean straw every now and then, but they were most likely very dirty. And along with that, there was a pool in the center, and I understand that that pool is no longer there. But according to legend, there were hot springs in this area. And the King James, if you read it in the King James, you realize that I did not read a verse that is, and that verse is not in the NIV, the New Living Translation, in the ESV, in most of the more recent translations, verse 4 is missing. And I believe in the King James it is in italics, which means that it was most likely added. And according to the early manuscripts, that verse was not included in the early manuscripts, according to most scholars. So the angel stirring the water was most likely a legend. Now, there was something that happened because people came to this pool recognizing that there was something that caused healing. And there is a belief that these were hot springs, and that at certain times of the year, the springs would stir, and they would only stir for so long until that warm water kind of dissipated and it was no longer good for what people would go there for. So now that's not actual. I don't know that those are all actual facts, but those are some legends that I have read. So you can take that with a grain of salt, but I'm trying to set the stage for what could have happened here. Jesus, going to the feast, he's going to Jerusalem, he walks through this area, and he sees this man. And he recognizes that something is off. There's a problem here. This man obviously has been here a long time. You can imagine that if he was laying there in that sheep pen for all those 38 years, he didn't have anybody to come take care of him. I'm going to let you put the picture together. Probably didn't look too nice. He probably was dirty. His hair was probably a mangled mess. And Jesus, learning that he had been there for a long time, he asked him a question. Do you want to get well? What is the man's response? I mean, I think My response would be, sure. And instead, he says, I haven't had anybody take me to the pool. Someone else always gets there ahead of me. And that's the excuse. The man's response was an automatic excuse. After 38 years, he had become comfortable with living in the manure. To the point where he didn't recognize that Jesus was there. Jesus was offering him something that was better. Jesus looks at him and he says, get up, take your mat, and go. And he did. He gets his mat, he leaves, and guess who catches him? The leaders, the Jewish leaders catch him and they're like, hey, what are you doing carrying your mat? And right away he's like, he told me to do it. I'm just doing what he told me to do. He still didn't recognize what just happened. He knew he was healed, but he didn't recognize what had happened. And instead, he wants to shift the blame as to why he's breaking the law. Now, there is controversy on the law that he was breaking, that it was not really part of the law that God gave them, that it was part of the law that they had added. So we're not going to go into that. But I just want to look at that as just what was his response. He had been delivered, and yet he wasn't. There was still something holding him back. Later, and he didn't know who Jesus was, because Jesus didn't tell him who he was. He had no idea who had just healed him. You would think he would have recognized that there was something about this man who had told him to get up and walk that was different. Later, Jesus finds him at the temple. And he looks at him and he says, see, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. Now, I have not been able to really research that, but I'm thinking that this is the only time that Jesus actually healed someone and made an insinuation that their sickness was because of something that they were doing. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I'm right there. I panicked a little bit when I saw the Sunday school, because I didn't look at the Sunday school lesson until I saw the bulletin, and then I panicked a little bit, and I was like, wait a minute, am I using the Sunday school lesson for my message? And I was like, it's too late now. It's going to be what it is. But in that story, Jesus recognized that there was something the woman was doing that was causing where she was. And here, it appears that Jesus recognized that something this man was doing was causing his sickness. We don't know what it was. It doesn't really matter. The third person is Jesus. How did Jesus know that this man had been there a long time? Did he stop and have a conversation with him? Did he recognize by his look? I wonder about myself, and I wonder what would I have done. A couple weeks ago, I was, and I may have shared this part of this story here, but a couple weeks ago, I was at exit 22. It was cold. It was windy. I was meeting someone. I had run into the raceway and used the bathroom and came back out. My contact was there. I was going to go to the truck, give it to him, and I'm leaving. And this car pulls up. And I immediately recognize the car. I recognize the person. And I knew the story. Because just a couple months before, this same man had stopped me at exit 13 when I was fueling up the truck, and he had a story. And it's a long story. I won't give you all the fun part of the details, but he starts into his story, and I'm like, dude, you could at least change your story a little bit. I mean, I could have given him his story word for word. I'm cold. I need to go. I didn't have the compassion that Jesus had. And I looked at him and I said, sir, I said, I recognize you. And I recognize your story, and it's exactly word for word. And it was a story about Lexington Hospital, how they did him so bad, and he had just left there. And I should have said, I'm not quite as quick as I should be sometimes. I should have said, well, that's the same story you had 3 months ago. And why did you go back to Lexington Hospital? But I knew that what the man was doing was trying to get money for drugs. Because it was obvious. Now, what would Jesus have done there? Jesus probably would have had a little different perspective than I did. Number one, I didn't have a jacket on. I was cold. And it's no excuse. I'm not going to give an excuse for it. Looking back, I wish I would have taken just a minute with him and said, you know, maybe you need to look at where you're headed and what's happening in your life. But Jesus here stopped and took the time. Jesus knew. He knew what the Jewish leaders were going to say, but he saw a need, and he was willing to bring change to this man. You're probably asking yourself by now, what do these two stories have to do with choices? Let's unpack that just a little bit. The story of the official, he made three choices. And those three choices impacted not only his faith, but his son's faith and his family's faith. He believed that Jesus would heal his son enough that he walked 16 hours for that to happen. He believed Jesus when he told him his son would live, and Jesus said, go home. He turned around and went home. And because of that faith, he and his whole household believed. Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for the conviction of things not seen. Sometimes God wants us to step out. Sometimes he wants us to take that 16-hour journey, and sometimes it feels like that 16 hours has turned into way more than that. But he does want us to do that. The lame man, on the other hand, was so entrenched in his infirmities that he couldn't see anything. In fact, it appears that he had become comfortable with where he was, even though he did not like his circumstances. It's obvious that he didn't want to be there. And yet, it was easy to just get used to the fact that he was there. Sometimes I'm like that lame man. When I'm given the opportunity to make changes, I can't see anything but the negative possibilities. 2 weeks ago in the video that we watched, Frank talked about how we generally will gravitate to what makes us comfortable. And an example is that if we grow up in a negative environment, we'll often find a partner or friends who are the same way. And we don't like that about ourselves, but often we will gravitate to what makes us comfortable. Jesus' question here, do you want to be healed, leaves us with a choice. Maybe this guy had given up to the point that he had no idea how to get out of this. The question that I have to ask myself is, when I see the things that I do that I don't like, and I see the things that I do that I don't want to do I want to change enough that I am willing to do the hard thing to bring about that change? Jesus' words in verse 14 says, "See, you're well. Now go and quit sinning. Because if you don't, it could get worse." And the man recognized at that point that it was different than what he thought it was. If you look in the verses before that, he really didn't give credit. Number one, because he didn't know who it was. But number two, because I don't think he really understood what had just happened. The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus that made him well. Looking back on 2023, Calvin, or whoever's back there, you can put that picture up. I have a picture I want to show you. I knew it not to put it up early because it's going to be distracting. Looking back to 2023, ask yourself the question, what would I do different if given the chance to do them over again? And looking ahead into 2024, what choices am I willing to make to bring about that change? Let me turn the light off because you'll get a better picture. This is a teenage decision. Good judgment comes from experience. Experience, that comes from poor judgment. What are the choices that I'm willing to make to avoid poor judgment and to do better in 2024? Carter, do you have a song? 701. You can stand. Father, this morning we recognize our need for you. We recognize the need to be aware of who we are, to recognize the need of how we respond to those in need. The example of the official, the example of the lame man, and the example of Jesus give us a picture. And we want to respond like Jesus did. Help us to have faith like the official did. But also recognizing that there are times that we will respond like the lame man did, but help us to see that and to make the change that needs to happen. Father, I pray this morning that you would bless each person here, those that could not be here today for whatever reason. Father, would you walk with us in this coming week and help us to learn, to respond, to recognize the opportunities that we have, the choices that we make to bring honor to you and honor to those around us, and to bring change to those in need. Walk with us this week. In Jesus' name, amen.